Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Cookie Cast. So now on Cookie Cast, it's the football podcast, and boy, it's a bumper episode. They seem to be big these days, big, juicy football episodes. Whew, plenty of football gone, plenty of football to come. Before we start, please do consider like, share, subscribe, and comment. Leave a review where you can leave a review. Big one, the big one, share the podcast around. If you've got a football fan in your life, send them this podcast. They will thank you for it. Right, let's get started because there's plenty to go through. Here we go. This is Cookie Cast, football podcast.
Recording in progress.
Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. Recording is in progress. Welcome on in, one and all, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. We're back, your Cookie Cast podcast network, bringing you glad tidings of good cheer and football nonsense. I'm not alone. Obviously, the people watching on YouTube can see I have the usual three suspects with me, Messrs. Cook, Woodmansey and Moore. How are we all, boys? And more importantly, how was our Easters?
I mean, the two are very strongly related. It rhymes with kite.
Delightful?
Let's go with no. We'll find out. Stay tuned to find out more.
I can't possibly think of what he could mean. It certainly can't be to do with his football team. Perhaps. Well, without any further ado, let's jump right in. So, our first game of week 35 indeed saw Mr. Woodmansey's Hull City taking on almost Mr. Moore's Stoke City. However, as we've discussed before, he's not that side of Stoke. He's much more of a Vale man.
We need to put this to bed. Wasn't born in Stoke. Didn't live in Stoke. Don't support Stoke. Support the other team from Stoke if I've got a preference to anything. So we say this every single time. The closest we've got is I lived in the same county as Stoke-on-Trent. None of these things are ever true. Thank you.
By which point then, Paul's a Leeds fan, right?
Exactly.
Thank you for tuning in.
Newcastle fan.
Will turn out to be the last the ever edition of the Cookie Cast podcast, football podcast. I do apologise, Mr. Moore. I will never say it again.
Good.
Down with the red and white scum. Yes, it was Hull versus Stoke. How did it go, Mr. Woodmansey?
In one sentence, worst performance of the season. It was dire. Hull managed 12 shots in the game. Doesn't sound so bad. None of them were on target.
Ooh.
Stoke are apparently very good at the dark arts, and not really much else. They had four yellow cards, one of which was very early in the first half, and the I can't think who it was now, because I've had probably too much chocolate. But the same guy, Hull got a free kick on the halfway line. The guy who'd already been carded proceeded to stand over the ball, just generally being a twat. The referee went and had a word with him. Give it the old, you know, I'm really sorry, won't do it again. Went and stood in directly the same spot over the ball to prevent the free kick from being taken a second time. Now, this is where I think Hull slip up, because I think we're too nice sometimes. Other teams would have kicked that ball at that player to emphasise the point.
And Luke so the McNally, maybe?
The ref would have had a decision to make. It was either number 25 or number 28, I think. Possibly. But either way, like, give the ref that decision to make. But no. They just stood and took it like an absolute bunch of knobs. Like, no. Not happy with that at all. It was dire. The whole first half was just absolute crap. It was 0-0 at half time, which the best thing about it I can say is that we weren't losing. However, that bit didn't really continue, because on 69 minutes, corner from the right-hand side, swung into the box, knocked down towards the back post, and Josh Lauren put it in. Set-piece goal. No one's ever going to be happy about conceding them. But it seemed that between them, Allsop and Philogene were conspiring to just not fucking turn up on Good Friday at all. Philogene hasn't looked the same player since he came back from injury, unless there's a big team and a set of TV cameras involved. We might get to that. But he was god-awful. And I don't think that it's... I might have mentioned this before. Since they brought in Zaruri in the January transfer window, they've got this thing where when both Philogene and Zaruri are on the pitch, they like to swap flanks, which is fine. I get that. It would be great if, you know, they could both actually play on both flanks, because seemingly, as soon as Zaruri's on the pitch, he gets his preference. Philogene moves to his probably less preferred side, and just proceeds to be absolutely terrible. Don't work for me. Anyway, the Hull were pushing for it. They got a corner in the last like few minutes. Sent the keeper up. Again, might get to that again, surely. Nothing really came of it. And then, yeah, ball broke. Stoke ran down the other end. And in the third minute of stoppage time, I'm assuming he's called Hoover, or however you want to pronounce it, shall we say. Scored with a really speculative shot, which bounced past Ryan Allsop, because he was clearly tired from running up for a corner and just thought, nah, fuck it, we've lost anyway. It bounced over him. He's the last few games, you can probably tell I'm annoyed by him, the last few games, more mistakes have crept in. We brought in a keeper in January, haven't used him yet. I think might be time just to try him out a little bit, just to see how that one lies in Ivor Pando, but we'll see. But yeah, terribly, terribly disappointing day on Good Friday, and everybody left feeling like the playoffs have gone, and I'm very much inclined to agree at this stage. So yeah, final score was Hull 0, Stoke 2.
Not the best, not the greatest of starts to the Easter weekend, sadly. That's echoed in our predictions on the podcast. Andy had gone 1-0 Hull, Billy Sharp to score the goal. Did he even come on?
No, do you know what? I can't remember if it was this game or the game before. There was one game recently where there was no substitutions, but I don't know that Billy Sharp did come on. He definitely was around the bench, but no, I'm not. I don't recall seeing him on Friday.
Not the best. The rest of us, myself and Stu and Matt, had all gone for 2-1 Hull City wins. We'd also all three of us had picked Carvalho and Philogene to score for Hull. Matt had gone me to score for Stoke. Stu had gone Yun Ho to score for Stoke. And I had gone Laurent to score for Stoke.
I will apologise. Billy Sharp did get on the pitch. Obviously made a huge impact. The bit that I failed to mention was that for a few weeks, Hull fans have been crying out for Rossini to start a striker. They started with Noah Ohio up front. Didn't work out either. The guy's not had a run in the team, though. So right, I would suggest starting with a striker more regularly, and we may be more well-versed in playing in that manner.
Mm. Food for thought, definitely. So yes, so from that first game, just the 1 point myself, everyone else on zero. And our second game saw my boys Middlesbrough travel down to the south coast to take on Southampton at St Mary's. Difficult game on paper, obviously, as Southampton find themselves in the top four with an outside shot of being in the shake-up for the automatic promotion places come the end of the season. And they certainly started the better of the two and took the lead on 12 minutes when Adam Armstrong opened the scoring. The ball had worked its way down into the left-hand corner. Near the corner flag, there was a cross that came in from the left-hand side. Made its way to Johnny Howson for the simple clearance. But Johnny doesn't play the ball that way. That's not Johnny Howson's style. He'd much rather shank the ball directly up in the air for it to fall right to the feet of Adam Armstrong for him to control, get out of his feet, and then finish low and to the left of Senny Dieng. Poor goal to give away from Borough's perspective in the fact that they had the chance to clear it, but obviously didn't. But no great surprise that, that Southampton took the lead and made it 1-0. It stayed that way throughout the rest of the first half. There was a couple more chances for Southampton, but nothing really of any note. But I say nothing of any note. There was a point where when it was 1-0, Middlesbrough actually had a chance to equalise when Finn Azaz got the ball out of his feet and had a shot that hit the post and came back out. Southampton should have made it 2-0 when Che Adams found himself about 6 yards out with no marker. And somehow managed to put the ball wide, which was quite interesting. And then into the second half, Southampton again had the chance to make it 2-0, when I think it was Adam Armstrong again was had the ball in his feet, working his way across the 6 yard box. He managed to stick Matt Clark on his arse, but Matt Clark decided, I think I can still defend this, lads, and actually got a clearing header whilst lying on the ground, which was quite interesting to see. So Southampton had, like I said, numerous chances to make it 2-0, and they were punished late on for not scoring that second goal when the ball worked its way down the right-hand side of the pitch. The ball made its way to Alex Gilbert, who was on as a second-half substitute, and clipped the ball in to a roundabout the penalty spot where Emmanuel Latin Laugh was lurking, and he buried the header low to the keeper's left to salvage a point for the Borough and make it 1-1. Certainly not the result that I had on the cards, as I'd gone for a 2-0 Southampton win. And a goal apiece for Mr. Armstrong A and Armstrong S. So I do get the bonus point for the Armstrong A goal. Andy had gone for a 2-0 Borough win with goals apiece for Fours and Greenwood. Sadly, after recording last week, we did get the news that Marcus Fours will be out for the remainder of the season, sadly, with an injury that he picked up over the course of the international break. So sadly, Marcus Fours won't be scoring again this season. Yeah, whatever, Stu. You don't see me. You don't see me crying about Aaron Connolly being. Oh no, definitely do. Yes, Andy gone for Fours and Greenwood to score. So sadly, no points for Mr. Cook there. Matt had also gone for a Southampton win. He'd gone 2-1, goal apiece for Smallbone and Adam Armstrong. Also, he had gone for Fours from a Borough perspective as well. So it does get himself a bonus point for the Armstrong goal. Stuart Lubensey had predicted a 1-1 draw. 2 points for the correct scoreline there. Sadly, he did predict Adams and Jones to score the goals, so was probably quite furious when Che Adams decided to put wide from 4 yards out as opposed to right to the one in the back of the net. But then he wouldn't have got his 1-1 scoreline, so every cloud and all that jazz. Two games gone. 2 points for me, 2 points for Stu. 1 point for Matt, and no points for Andy. So, we move on to our third game of the week, and we're off Good Friday now, which is the straight up Saturday games, where Nottingham Forest took on Crystal Palace. Quite a important game for this one. Forest, giving them the chance to, you know, put some points back on the board after that. Those points deductions they had with the profit and sustainability rules breach that they were found to be in accordance with. How did they get on against the Palace, Matthew?
Well, it's been a so before the game, we learned on Thursday of the unfortunate passing of Larry Lloyd. So he's one of the original kind of, I think they call them the Miracle Men, the Forest team that won the European Championships back to back. So he joined Forest in 1976 from Coventry, where he'd already. But previously he'd been at Liverpool, where he'd won the league and the UEFA Cup as well. He made his Forest debut against Hull at Boothroyd Park and lost. but then went on. So then went on to play for Forest. I think he was one of those Clough and Taylor signings of somebody who was probably on the kind of downslope of their career. But they brought in to do a job with younger players around him. So then, obviously, played for Forest from 1976 to 1981. So, kind of as Clough started to redo the team, he was one of the ones that was kind of sent out. But yeah, so won a league cup. Well, won the league and then two European Cups and a couple of League Cups as well with Forest in his time there. Played for England 4 times. But yeah, so sad passing for him. There was a tribute for him at the start of the game. There was a kind of a moment's applause, or kind of what they do. And before the game as well, on Saturday, they opened the Nottingham Forest Museum. We have enough stuff to open a museum, apparently. So that was done. And obviously with the aforementioned points deduction, there was a kind of like big kind of swell. So there's a supporters group called Forza Garibaldi that do like all their pre-match flags and stuff like that within the ground. So they'd kind of done one of those before the game to incorporate not only Larry Lloyd but also the kind of like backs to the wall, batting down the hatches, fight kind of thing. And then Forest proceeded to not respond to that from reports. It was a bit of a chaotic first 10 minutes. Nobody really kind of took control, which is when Forest are at their most vulnerable. And, of course, they conceded a goal. I think Eze caused them a lot of problems. Slotted it through to Matete, who finished really well. I meant to mention it last week. He was an absolute donkey last year. I don't know what's kind of happened. He seems to have kind of like, this season he's a slightly better donkey. He's kind of, you know, like not quite as donkeyish as he was last year, but kind of still not great. But yeah, smashed it in the back of the net. Poor defending from Forest. A bit all over the place. Felipe kind of flew out of the line and then he just ran into the space, and by that point, I think Eze ran into the space, which dragged Murillo, and then that left space for Matete. I think it settled down a bit. Reading reports, Forest were very negative, very kind of didn't take the game to Palace, and it was the thing, I think, like when Nuno took over from Cooper, I think it was the one thing I was worried about, that Forest would become a negative team, because from what I'd seen of him in the past with Wolves, they'd been quite negative. And then when we saw those first three or four games at Forest, it wasn't like that. They were like flying around, and you know, so we stuffed Newcastle and beat Man United. And then he's gone back into his shell a little bit. But then at half time, they took off Sangare, pushed the team a little bit more. And just after the hour mark, Hudson-Odoi got it on the left, laid it back to Gibbs White, who chipped the ball in, and a deft touch of a header from Wood. I mean, it's one of the best headers I've seen. It's a real life, just gentle redirection. And Dean Henderson, I mean, I thought maybe he might chuck one in the net for us, because he was with us last season. His positioning was poor, but the Wood goal was really good. So a little kind of dink header. After that, I think there's both chances for both Forest and Palace to win the game, but it came out as a 1-1 draw, which resulted in Forest being back out of the relegation zone on goal difference.
Default, it all counts, mate. It all counts. With going back to the Mateta thing with Palace, I don't know if it's just me that thinks this, but Palace are one of those teams that seems to have like two or three or like maybe even four strikers where if you put them all together, the best parts of them might constitute one good striker, but none of them can ever seem to score any more than about five or six goals a season.
Nah.
So they're always going to struggle to like get a decent goal scorer.
It seems to be a gentle rotation of like donkey strikers as well. Like Benteke was the same as well. You know, it's like
Benteke, Edouard, Mateta. Yeah, they're all basically the same, but they all might as well be the same guy. Just change his name every 6 months, but it's basically the same guy.
The Leonardo DiCaprio method of strikers. Similar age.
Predictions-wise, Matt had optimistically gone for a 2-1 Nottingham Forest win. Gibbs White and Wood to score the goals, Eze to score for Palace. So does get himself a bonus point for the Chris Wood goal. Myself and Mr. Cook had both gone 1-0 Forest. I'd gone Gibbs White, and he had gone Wood. So does get himself a bonus point for the goal scorer there. He's done it again though. For the second game in a row, he's come up with the correct scoreline, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Wubensee, 1-1 draw. Sadly, that's where his points end again, as he had Ilanga and Eze as the goal scorers. So, three games in, 2 points for myself, 2 points for Mr. Moore, a point for Mr. Cook, 4 points for Mr. Woodmansey. Our fourth game of the week, and what on paper should have been game of the weekend, saw Mr. Cook's adopted side, Manchester City, take on Arsenal in a top of the table of sorts clash. For all the hype and the build up this game was given, to say that it petered out to a 0-0 drab affair would probably be doing a bit of an injustice to this, because I watched this and this was poor. This was not one for the purists, let's put it that way.
I think it was just a case of there was so much hype around it, billed as potentially the game that could decide the league, that for two teams that will normally quite happily just rip another side apart at the drop of a hat, they both decided to just completely just withdraw from any of that and just not. They just didn't want to lose, did they? That was the issue. Both teams went negative.
That seemed to be what it boiled down to. It was a case of, let's try and see if we can sneak one, but the absolute essential is that we don't concede. It was something ridiculous. Like, I don't have the exact stats in front of me, but I'm pretty sure it was something like the first time in something like 40 plus games that Man City hadn't scored at home. The last team that had stopped them from scoring at the Etihad was Crystal Palace, and that was like 3 years ago.
So it's the streak was 57 games.
57?
That came to an end, yeah, in that game.
Outrageous. So yeah, 57 games on the spin where they scored at least once. at the Etihad, so that game, that sequence came to an end. Predictions wise, myself and Andy had both gone for 2-1 Manchester City wins. I had Haaland, Doku and Martinelli with the goals. Andy had Haaland, Alvarez and Saka. Stuart gone for just a simple 1-0 Man City win with De Bruyne to score. Matt had gone for a 1-1 draw, Haaland and Odegaard to score. So does get a bonus point to the fact that he'd gone for the draw. So just a point for Matt, no points for anyone else there. Our next game takes us to the first of the Easter Monday fixtures, and it was Middlesbrough versus Sheffield Wednesday. I was supposed to go to this game, but the person I was supposed to go with never got back to me. Bad times. So Paul had to not go. Oh. I know. You're absolutely right, Matt. It is sad. It's very, very sad. So sad, in fact, that I don't feel I can do this game justice in the time that we have left. So I'm going to step away. I'm going to recuse myself alongside these three gentlemen as well. We're going to pause, reflect. We'll come back, and I'll give you the breakdown of the Middlesbrough versus Sheffield Wednesday game. You won't need to do anything, however, as it will pop straight back on your feed almost instantaneously.
Recording in progress.
And just like that, we're back at it. So, as we were saying before we took the break, Middlesbrough versus Sheffield Wednesday, I was meant to be in attendance, but sadly, it didn't happen. And I missed Middlesbrough taking the lead in the first half. Let me just get the stats up. They took the lead in the 41st minute. An own goal coming from Michael Ihekwe. A corner was played in from the right hand side. Completely missed everyone at the front post. And Ihekwe was just the unfortunate soul that happened to be in the way of the ball when it hit him. And just went in at the back stick. 1-0 went to went through to half time. There was a couple of chances for either side. Nothing really to write about. There was a Sheffield Wednesday chance where the guy seemed to be clean through, but put the ball wide of Dieng's left-hand post, trying to sort of shape the ball in. Borough did make it 2-0, however, on the 73rd minute when Isaiah Jones got another one for the season. Luke Ayling popping up with yet another assist from right back. Played a nice little sort of slipped pass into the edge of the box where Isaiah Jones picked the ball up, carried it a couple of yards further, and then had a strike that seemed to sort of loop up off the defender and just completely took the keeper out of the equation. The ball finally nestled on the back of the net on the left-hand side. They did have a chance to make it 3-0 when the ref gave a penalty for a bit of a questionable handball by Barry Bannon right at the edge of the box. There was a challenge that was done on Lewis O'Brien earlier in the second half, which looked much, much more of a stick-on penalty than the one that was actually given. So I don't know if it was a case of the ref probably had in the back of his mind, I maybe should have given that one earlier, so I'll give him the penalty they probably should have had earlier on in the game now. Sam Greenwood stepped up to take the penalty, but sadly his aim was off somewhat as the keeper guessed the right way, but he actually dragged it onto the post. So missed the chance to make it 3-0 to the Borough, so it stayed 2-0. We all get points. As everyone had predicted, a Middlesbrough win on this one. Andy had gone 1-0 with Latte Laugh to score the goal, so just gets the 1 point. Matt had gone 2-1, Latte Laugh and Azaz with a consolation goal from Wednesday for Ugbo, so only gets the 1 point for the result. Myself and Stu had both gone for 2-0 Middlesbrough wins, so we'll get 2 points for that. I had McGree and Azaz. As we discussed earlier in the podcast, sadly, Riley McGree is also on the injured list and is out for the rest of the season with an injury picked up in the international break. Finazaz didn't get on the score sheet. Stu had 2-0 with Latilaf and Fours to score. So, again, sadly, no Fours for the rest of the season. So, for that game, 2 points apiece for me and Stu, 1 point apiece for Matt and Andy. Our second game of Good Friday saw Leeds take on Hull City. I say Good Friday, Easter Monday. Do apologise. Yes, Leeds United taking on Hull City. This one was live on the Sky telebox. And I don't think the best team in this contest got what they deserved. Would you be in agreement with that, Mr. Woman Team?
Without sounding too biased, absolutely. Hull did get off to a slow start, though. There's no denying that. It was a much improved performance from Good Friday overall. But a really slow start. Leeds were always going to be dangerous, particularly down the wings with Somerville. He got out onto the left, got into the box, had a shot at the near post, which was parried by the, you know, ever fantastic again, Ryan Alsop. The ball wasn't pushed out of play. It was just looped up to the back post where Ryan Giles decided he would now get in on the action of just switching off completely and not even challenging for the ball. So Sam Byron headed it in, unchallenged, to give Leeds a 1-0 lead after 9 minutes. The comedy moment of the game provided from, everybody's favourite, old Paddy Bamford, missing from 2 yards, which was just, like, he could have put the game to bed there and then. Again, Ryan Giles let the ball go, had a chance. Well, I suppose it was one of them where if he'd touched it, he'd have probably cracked himself in case it was going in his own net. But decided, oh no, it's alright, there's no player near me. To which Bamford was probably as close as Giles' own pair of shorts at that point. But he managed to put it over the bar from 2 yards, so that was at least some light entertainment. However, Hull did grow into the game, started to get going a little bit, and on 34 minutes, Tyler Morton picked up the ball after a deflected, attempted shot from Philogene, took it out to the left-hand side of the penalty area, drilled it across, and Fabio Cavallio managed to get in front of his man at the front post to equalise. So that was pretty good. It was well worked. It's about the second phase of the attack. They were organised and it worked. So ruined confidence from that completely. It was 1-1 at half time. It was 1-1 on 86 and a half minutes. Unfortunately, Mr. Dependable, Regan Slater, decided that was the exact moment in time to just completely lose the fucking plot. And Somerville got past him, left-hand side of the penalty area, and rather than taking the ball, just sort of stood in front of him, sort of got his, for want of a better expression, got his leg over. And Somerville saw his opportunity and went down like a sack of shit. But it definitely was a penalty. There's no debating that. It was just a really stupid time to make such a tackle because, yeah, he might have got the ball in. He wasn't going to score from that angle, but there was no guarantee that the cross was going to get converted. Probably best to let it go, but no, he didn't. Then we had a nice little bit of drama where I thought, ooh, there's light at the end of this particular tunnel as Leeds had substituted on Joel Pirro halfway through the second half. Designated penalty taker at that point, so he's got the ball spotted up, he's been ready to go, and then his own teammate Somerville, who'd won the penalty, strolled on over and said no, picked the ball up, re-spotted it himself as they were having a little bit of an argument about what was happening, and in the end Alsop just decided that he was going to pick his corner and stick to it and dived completely out of the way of the ball that was rolled, not hit, rolled down the middle. There was very little pace on that penalty. Disappointing. Hull had played reasonably well to that point, so to their credit, they didn't give it up, and even with such little time left on the clock, they were pressing for an equaliser. That pressure resulted in a corner, which they sent Allsop up, although there was probably about close to 3 minutes left on the clock at this point. First corner was put out, second corner then played in, and of course Leeds break. Also, isn't exactly Linford Christie, decides that he'll try and get back as best as he can, but by which time it was already too late. Leeds have broken, and then Dan James can't score from 12 yards apparently during the week for Wales, but can score from about 40. Out on the right wing, he just had to hit the target because Allsop was nowhere to be seen. But unfortunately, the game finished 3-1 to Leeds, and that scoreline is definitely flattering. Definitely flattering. It was another one of the games as well where we've had to endure this Liam Rossini rhetoric of, oh, we had the most possession, we were the better side. Not one again, mate. Not one again. So he did go back to not playing a striker. So maybe his theory of packing the game with midfielders and we got a better performance, maybe there's some merit in that. Maybe it's because that's how we've been playing for the last 8 or 9 weeks again, so the team have had time to get used to it. It was brought to my attention earlier on the day of recording that Rossini has been nominated for Championship Manager of the Season. I can completely understand that. I think he's taken a team that were almost relegation fodder a year ago to comfortably mid-table with possibly at one stage maybe one hand on the playoffs. The problem is, if we haven't ever got a plan B, can he really be considered in that bracket for me? I think he's got a little way to go yet. I'm not saying I'm against him by any stretch, but I think there are better managers. And to be fair, the way that the Championship's going this season, there isn't any shadow of a doubt that the Ipswich manager is not winning that award. So, but yeah, like I say, unfortunately, same old, same old. Most of the possession, but unfortunately, none of the goals to back that up.
Yeah, disappointing. Predictions-wise, you'll be shocked to hear that the most optimistic of us was Andrew Cook. We've gone for a 3-0 Hull win, two for Billy Sharp and a goal from Anas Zaruri. Sadly, no points there for Mr. Cook. Myself and Mr. Moore had both gone for 2-2 draws. Matt had gone Nonto and Bamford, Zaruri and Philogene for Hull. So sadly, no points there for Matt. I had also gone 2-2. Two Fan and Zaruri for Hull. But I did have James and Somerville scoring for Leeds, so I did manage to buy myself 2 bonus points there. Stu had gone for a 1-0 Leeds win with a Somerville goal, so does bag 2 points for that game. So 2 points for me, 2 points for Stu, none for either of Matt or Andy. 2 games to go, the penultimate of which was Nottingham Forest taking on Fulham. And obviously after the Crystal Palace game of the weekend, Forest found themselves clear of the relegation zone on goal difference. Would this result maybe put them clear of the relegation zone on a points basis, Matthew?
All right, so I think last week I said that out of the two games, Forest were going to get a draw and a win. I didn't know which way it was going to be round. I think I might have it the wrong way around. And I did have it the wrong way around. Obviously, for the previous previous game, I mentioned Forza Garibaldi, which is the kind of fan base kind of thing that does all the displays at the start. They did a really cool one for this game. and I think they prepare it all themselves. So they had the Gibbs White celebration with his fingers in his ears. And so the massive kind of mural of him up in the upper end of the Trent end. And then I think underneath it said that shut out the noise and play. And it was really cool. I think apparently someone had said at the start of the game, like, Gibbs White kind of watched it and was just like, you could see him just totally taken back that he was the kind of focus of it, and was like really kind of like almost kind of emotional kind of with it. And it seemed to work, as Forrest apparently flew out of the block. So obviously I mentioned the last game that myself and a lot of Forest fans are getting frustrated by the kind of fact that Nuno Santos seems to have gone into his shell a little bit. Not last night. Alanga started, Callum Hudson-Odoi started, and within, you know, what, 9 minutes, I think, was the Hudson-Odoi goal. Really nice flowing move. Gibbs White getting the ball, spreading it wide. When you saw the goal, you thought, Christ, he had to finish that one, because I think Chris Wood would have ripped his right foot off if he hadn't passed it to him. There was him and Alanga in the box, and I was like, oh, you're lucky you finished. Obviously, I knew what the score was, but I thought if you had not have scored there, there would have been hell on. So yeah, 1-0 Hudson-Odoi. They had a load more chances. I think Hudson-Odoi had another chance. Alanga hit the post again. And then kind of midway through the second half, Murillo played a really nice ball through like the inside left channel to Wood, who was probably 25 yards out. And when I first saw it, I thought it got taken a deflection, because it kind of like had a knuckleball kind of thing to it. And the keeper was completely wrong-footed. But no, clean finish. It was a really nice finish. And I think it's that kind of thing of, like, one of the podcasts I was listening to today was... saying that you just don't expect it from Chris Wood. He's generally in the box. But it was a really good finish. Just to kind of top it off and to kind of fit with the night, right in added time at the end of the first half, Gibbs White picked the ball up again. He carried it through, played it to Danilo, who then kind of flicked it back to him, and he had space in the back of the net. He tucked it in. And then he went and celebrated in front of the fans to recreate the thing that he'd done. So kind of, you think, get to half-time, 3-0, plain sailing. It's funny, kind of when you listen to other kind of Forest podcasts, they all have the same attitude of, we were still nervous. And probably if people go and watch the wrestling podcast, which you should, I look distinctly more distracted in the first night of the WrestleMania predictions than I do in the second night. Because of course, what happened within the first 5 minutes of the second half? Forrest conceded a goal. Oh, where did they concede that goal from? You might ask. Yes, it was a corner. It was a corner. Yes.
Sorry, Matt. One thing I think it's important to point out is, yeah, I mean, obviously 3-0 at half time, you were absolutely flying. But you know that you've absolutely played a team off the park when they make three substitutions on about half an hour of the match.
32 minutes, yeah.
Oh my God, I saw that happen and I was like, holy shit. Like, they were on a different level last night. You would not have seen that first half and thought that they were anywhere near the bottom three.
I think it's the most frustrating thing about it is because, you know, there's obviously a team there, because... You don't do what we did to Newcastle. You don't do what we did to Man United. Even the Villa game before Cooper got sacked and West Ham the other week, they're not terrible sides. And also, you've got to remember that Fulham turned us 5-1 like right at the end of Cooper's kind of thing, so not a bad side. It's, I don't know if it's tactics from the manager, I don't know if it's motivation from the players. There's only one player who's played in all of the victories this year. Anybody guess which player that is?
Wood. It's got to be.
Danilo.
Huh?
Danilo's played in every game that Forest has won, but he sums up Forest completely. On his day, like last night, he was awesome, but you could guarantee, come to the predictions in a bit, you can guarantee that on Sunday, he'll be absolutely non-existent and fetched off at 50 minutes. And that's the problem, it's the consistency. And hopefully there's some kind of like, hopefully Nuno's realised that this team works, and hopefully sticks with it and doesn't start tinkering again and just kind of plays the team. But I fear that he won't. Toyson with a header. And in true Forest style, they proceeded to then kind of make it nervy for the rest of the game. I think Nico Williams hit the bar from a deflected shot. I think the slightly hidden one from that one is that on the follow-up, Danilo absolutely rifled it into Wood's balls, which was quite funny because he collapsed to the ground so fast. Clung on a little bit. Usual, still consistent Forest problems of set pieces and crosses. We can't deal with them. But a crucial win that takes us 3 points clear of the relegation zone and just 2 points off Everton above us, with their, as we keep on talking, their points deduction on its way, considering it is a minimum and guaranteed 3 points deduction. You can't get any less than that. That's kind of, I heard that from was it Kieran Maguire, that you can't get any less than 3 points. So Forest's appeal, that's going to possibly at the most going to get us one less point off. So 2 points off Everton, 3 points ahead of Luton, who also lost tonight, which makes it kind of cements that a little bit.
Yes, indeed. Predictions-wise, three of us had gone for draws. The only one who didn't go for a draw was Stu, who went for a 2-1 Fulham win. Sadly, his goal-scoring picks, it will be one of the three substituted after half an hour, and Pereira didn't find the back of the net for Fulham. His Wood goal scorer, though, for Forest, does bag him a bonus point. The three draws obviously don't get any of us points, but just for the book's sake, I had one with Wood, and he also had a Wobie, so gets himself a bonus point for the Wood goal scorer. Matt had 2-2 with Hudson-Odoi, Elanga, Muniz, and Willian, and I had 2-2 with Wood, Elanga, Muniz, and also had Iwobi. So, not a great night for Mr. Iwobi. Pulled off after 30 minutes. So, it was a point apiece across the board for each of us there. Which leaves the last game of the Easter break, which may or may not have finished within the last couple of moments. Can't possibly say. It's Andy's adopted team again, Manchester City, taking on Aston Villa. Man City started this one the faster of the two, and went a goal up on the 11th minute when, as he seems to be these days, their defensive midfielder Rodrigo, or Rodri, as he goes by on the back of his shirt, popped up with the goal in quite typical Rodri fashion. It was one of the ones where he sort of arrives from deep at the edge of the box and just slams the ball home to make it 1-0. But Villa actually equalised on the 20th minute with a lovely sort of passer move play where ex-husband of the boy Morgan Rogers was involved on a couple of occasions. He was the guy who played Durant in and then laid off the assist for him for his finish. So it was got to 1-0 for back to 1-1 for City versus Milan. City then looked a bit nervy and as if they were struggling to get a hold on the game. But every time they had a chance, Villa managed to snaffle it and then send the ball on the break to almost go 2-1 in front. But it was Man City that retook the lead just prior to the break. Phil Foden scoring the goal on the 45th plus one, so the 46th minute. And then into the second half, City took control of the game on the 62nd minute when Phil Foden helped himself to his second of the evening. And he actually completed his hat-trick on the 69th minute with a finish that looked as if he slipped as it went into the roof of the net. And then the game just sort of petered out from there. No more real chances to speak about for either team. To make it a 4-1 Manchester City win. You'll be surprised here. We all had a Manchester City win on the cards. So we each get a point before the score. Sadly, no one had 4-1. Andy had 2-0 with a goal each for Haaland and Alvarez. I had 3-0 with a goal for Alvarez and 2 for Foden. So I managed to get 2 points for the goal scorer and the 1 point for the correct result. Stu and Matt both had 2-1 for Man City. Haaland and Foden for Stu with Watkins to score for Villa. Matt had Silva and Haaland with Watkins to score for Villa, so just gets the 1 point for the result. What that means for the week is from the 8 games played, Andy took a total of 4 points. Matt took a total of 6 points. I took a total of 10 points. Winning the week with a whopping 11 points from the 8 games. Well done to you, Mr. Stuart Woodmansey.
Thank you.
That's week 35, done and dusted. Week 36 brings with it 6 games. The first of which will be Crystal Palace versus Manchester City. It's Mr. Cook's team back to back. We will get into those predictions in just a second, as we are going to take a little short break and be right back with you. Don't touch the dial. Be right back.
Recording in progress.
Seamless. Seamless, I tell you. So, week 36 starts as it finished last week with Crystal Palace taking on Mr. Cook's team of Manchester City. Obviously, it's Mr. Cook's team, therefore he will give his prediction last. I'll jump in here. I've got a nice, straightforward 3-0 Manchester City win, falling off the back of their 4-1 demolition of Aston Villa. Got a goal apiece for Haaland, Bernardo Silva, and after his hat-trick tonight, another one for Phil Foden. Stu, what have you got for Palace versus City?
Let's have a guess.
0-3?
Not quite. I've got 1-3, but I've got the exact same 3 goal scorers for Man City. My Palace goal scorer was Ayew.
Ayew what?
Ayew gonna score a goal.
Considering what we were discussing earlier about Palace's, you know, transformer striker, probably not. Ayew obviously brings the pace, not quite so much the finishing. Mateta obviously brings the fact that he's just massive. I've yet to work out what Edouard brings to the table, but I'll stick you down for Ayew.
Is it a case of, though, that you've never seen them, like, all in the same place at the same time, and they then, it's actually, you know, like the old fashioned cartoons where they wear like a really long mac and they're all on each other's shoulders and they just swap around to the right place when they need to.
Trust me, if they were all on each other's shoulders, you would know. They're all pretty big boys.
So. Probably being an inch shorter than Peter Crouch back in the day.
Matt, what have you got down for Palace City?
I've also gone for a 3-1 Manchester City win. Eze scoring for Crystal Palace. And then Haaland, Foden and Doku for Man City.
Lovely stuff. Mr. Cook, how do you see it going for your boys?
I've got a 0-2 with my favourite Man City duo, Haaland and Alvarez.
Haaland and Alvarez. Our second game of the week sees the first of two Welsh involvements. This one taking place in the Welsh capital as Cardiff City take on Hull City. Therefore, Mr. Wilmerty will be giving his prediction on this one last. I've gone for Hull to snap the streak and get a win. And the old boy rule, just as a low knee, but it is in effect. So I've gone for Philogene to score against his old employers. Andy, what have you got down for Cardiff versus Hull?
Yeah, I have literally exactly the same as what you've just predicted.
0-1 Philo.
Yeah.
Matthew?
I've gone for a 2-1 Hull win. I've got Ng for Cardiff.
Now,
NG.
Yeah. It's one of the strangest surnames I've ever seen, but
you knew it was coming.
Well, yeah.
They've got a lot to choose from, to be fair. I looked at that list, I was like, whoa, too many to choose from. And then I've got Cavalio and Zarori.
We transfer over to our Hull correspondent for whether he's going to be optimistic or if he's hit the bottom of the barrel, so to speak. Go on then, Stu, tell us how you see it going.
I am right there. Not optimistic at all. Yes, there was a hefty amount of unbeaten, but there was a lot of draws amongst that. And the last two games will have done nothing for the confidence, particularly actually because Giles and Coyle pulled up with injuries, which in the Leeds game, which are nothing's really been said about since. So having a right back and a left back potentially out of action for the foreseeable as well is not a lot of fun. So on that note, Cardiff 1-0.
Goal scorer?
Is it Meite? Meite? Meite?
Meite boy? M-E-I-T-E?
Yeah, with the little accents on it as well.
Dear. Our second game involving a Welsh team sees my boys Middlesbrough taking on Swansea City. My team, therefore I will give my prediction last. Let's go to Matt for his prediction on Middlesbrough versus Swansea.
2-1 Borough win. Latte Laugh and Greenwood. Low for Swansea.
Shorty got low, etc. Stu?
Didn't realise you had him down for a hat trick, Matt. I have also gone for a Middlesbrough 2, Swansea 1 scoreline, but my goal scorers are Latte Laugh and Azaz for the Borough. And Grimes for Swansea.
Grimes. Andrew?
I've got very similar, apart from no Swansea goal. So 2-0 to the Borough, and I've predicted the same goal scorers as Matchell, Greenwood and Latte Lath.
Greenwood. Latte Lath. Well, you'd be happy to know, people, that we have a clean sweep of a Latte Lath predictions on the podcast. We obviously all need the caffeine. I, too, have gone for a 2-1 prediction. I've gone for Barlaser to get the year, or Balassa. I keep saying Balassa on the BBDT team's coverage, so I will go with Balassa. Apparently had one of his better games in the Sheffield Wednesday game, so I imagine he's due a goal, let's say that. From Latte Lath, Balassa for the Borough, and just because I like the name, Ronald to score for Swansea.
I can confirm after seeing him in action at the MKM earlier this season, he doesn't go by Ronald, he goes by Ronald. It's like Ronaldo without the O on the end.
Awesome. I'll be sure to let him know when he scores that his name's Ronald. our next game sees Tottenham Hotspur taking on Nottingham Forest. Obviously, it's Mr. Moore's team. He will give his prediction last. I've gone for, sadly, a 3-1 Tottenham win on this one. I've gone for a goal apiece for Son, Kulusevski and Johnson. Annoyingly, he does strike me as the sort that might celebrate as well.
No. He won't.
You don't reckon?
No.
Well, I don't know. I reckon if some of the fans boo him, which I don't know why they would, and then I've gone for Wood to score for Forest.
If fans boo him, then it's time to get off the fucking bus, because that it's out of order, because he didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't think he'd celebrate. I genuinely don't think he'll celebrate.
Andy?
A 0-2 Forest win with 2 goals. As always, I have Wood, and I have my favourite Simpsons character, Hudson Odoi, to get the other goal.
Odoi! Stu?
I've unfortunately got a 2-1 Spurs win. Two things I've ignored over the last however many podcasts. And that has been the old boy rule and the Wood. So I've utilised both in this aspect. So for Spurs, I've got Maddison and Johnson. And then for Forest, I have Wood. So plus as well, was I ever walking past this fixture and not resisting picking Johnson and Wood in the same outing? Come on.
Whereas Johnson maybe won't celebrate, even though he has no connection to Forest, I imagine that if Maddison scores, he will go fucking loopy, as he's a Midland boy. So.
But he's a Leicester, isn't he? So.
How do you see it panning out, then?
I think the kind of general gist is, I think this is like a bit of a free hit. We get something. If the Spuds are... Obviously, there's the two sides of the Spud, as it were. You've either got, they turn up and they're absolutely awesome and you have a terrible day, or they turn up and they're typical Spurs and they're awful and no one's got a clue what's going on and all that kind of thing. I think it might be the other end of that, because Forest always seem to struggle a bit with them. I don't know why. So I've gone for 2-1 Spurs win. Johnson and Maddison, old boy rule, and then Maddison used to play for Leicester, so makes sense. And then I've got Elanga, because that Spurs defence is slow from memory.
Van der Ven's probably one of the quickest players in the league.
All right.
Well, obviously, he's He's had issues with his hamstring this season, so
Landry will be testing that then.
Well, yeah. I believe the phrase that we were probably all looking for there for was that Spurs are consistently inconsistent.
Consistently a lot of things, but if we got into that, we'd be here till next week.
Our fifth game of the week takes us back into Europe for Champions League football, where Real Madrid will be taking on Manchester City in the first leg of their quarter-final in the Champions League. Obviously, it's still Mr. Cook's team, therefore he will give his prediction last. I've gone for a 2-2 draw on this one. Goals apiece for Vinicius Junior, Bellingham, Doku and Rodri. Stu, what have you got down for Madrid versus City?
1-1.
One apiece.
Mm-hmm.
Any goal scorers?
I've got Valverde for Real Madrid.
Yeah, Valverde.
And Doku for Man City.
Matt?
I have gone for a Madrid 2-1 win. And the Cookie Cast Spanish announced team will have to take over the Man City predictions.
Oh, God, can you imagine it? When it gets to week 36, it's the Gracias, señora.
Apologies to any Spanish listeners that might have been around.
I've got Vinicius Junior and Bellingham for Madrid, and Silva for Man City.
Obviously, if that is a Madrid win, they have to do some conversations off air about where we take that particular support.
Well, it gets passed to the Spanish announce team.
Go on, Andy, how do you see? Do you think that your support will be getting an international flavour as of next week?
No, I've got Man City down to win 2-0. And I've also got Haaland to bag both goals.
Well, he had a full rest, didn't he, in the Villa game. He didn't need him, so he'll be rested and raring.
Some would argue he had a full rest in the Arsenal game as well. Obviously, this is off the back of him being described as a League 2 standard player by Roy Keane. Yeah, go on, Roy. Keep taking those tablets that you obviously are on, son.
I think his point was, outside of the box, he's a League 2 player. And his touch is shocking at times.
That is true. And I think at the start of the season, I think I was the only person who didn't pick him to be the top goal scorer in the Premier League. Just because I felt there would be a bit of a drop-off. But, I don't know. Obviously, when he was at Dortmund, there was concerns over his injury record. And I think that's sort of reared its head a little bit this season at City. So I don't know if that's maybe played it, got in his head a little bit. He's obviously dropped off a bit from last season. But either way, he's still a fantastic forward. Our final game of the week, is our final podcast head-to-head matchup of the season, as we see Hull City taking on Middlesbrough. Now, obviously, ahead of the weekend's games, both of these teams find themselves in 10th and 9th place, respectively. Hull still do have a game in hand on Borough, so obviously if they were to win that, they would go back above them in the table. Now, obviously, it's technically both mine and Stu's team, and we both can't go last, so I think in the past, I can't remember when we've done away team gets the sort of the spoils or home team gets the spoils. Seems that you're you appear to be the least optimistic of the odd team. I'll let you have the honour of giving the last prediction. How about that? Andy, what have you got down for Hull versus the Borough?
Guess.
Let me guess. Fence has been thoroughly parted between the cheeks, and you've gone for a 1-1.
Absolutely. You're both in the room. You both get a goal. I've got Zorori and Latte.
Matt?
I also have been picking splinters out of my backside for the past couple of days since I wrote these predictions down. So I've got 2 each. Billie Jean and Zorori. And Jones and Latte Laugh. You both score goals, you both concede goals. Goals.
Remember that I did say that Billie Jean only turns up when it's either TV cameras or a big team. And I don't think either of those are going to be at the MKM next Wednesday. So.
Oh.
Ouch. What was it?
Was that so diplomatic, the first two predictions, and then it's just gone nasty all of a sudden?
Was that Latte Laugh and Jones?
Yes. Alfie's coming to mediate.
I think we owe Hull for the smash and grab job that they did on us earlier in the season. So I have gone for a 2-1 away win on this one. 2-fan with the Hull goal, and then a goal apiece for Jones and Azaz for me, for Borough. Can't really call this one. Obviously Hull in horrendously awful form. That might pick up before they get to the game next week. But wouldn't surprise me if this one does end up as a draw, to be honest. But what do you think, Mr. Womansey?
Obviously, I'll find out first hand because I'll be in attendance. However, I was thinking about this. Usually, if your team was about to play somebody that was in the form that Hull are currently in, you'd be like, well, that's it then. We're usually the team that will break the streak. But I'm not sure how that works when it's like 2 podcast teams. It doesn't compute. However, the end of the season and the playoffs were in sight, and all of a sudden they've gone into doormat mode, so it's like, yep, just welcome on in. So Hull 0, Middlesbrough 2.
Bloody hell, he's not even giving himself a goal.
If you'd have seen that Stoke game at home, you would also have agreed. I have also gone for Jones, but I've gone for Greenwood as the other goal scorer.
Sadly, I will not be in attendance for this one, as I was too late to the party. By the time I had a look at the tickets, they were all sold out. That's the end of the predictions. Do we have any odds for this week? As I very, very foolishly missed those odds last week.
We do. I have the odds. So, yeah, as usual, I've done Hull, Borough and Forest to win, all to lose, all to draw. So, if the worst should happen and all 3 teams were to lose... So a Cardiff, Swansea and Tottenham Hotspurs win would net you 15.5-1. So that's not too shabby. If we all get 3 points apiece, the odds jump up slightly, which, always reassuring. Obviously, this is only for the games at the weekend, because I can't bet on Borough and Hull to win, funnily enough, in the game that they play each other next week. So, yeah, if Forest, Hull and Borough all win at the weekend, That'll net you 28.5 to 1. As always, the draw is where the odds jump up to the sky. So all three teams to draw will net you 64 to 1. And given Hull's form at the moment, given the fact that, without being horrible, Paul, it's Borough, Tottenham could not turn up to that game as well. Three draws aren't really that unrealistic either, I don't think. So the fact that they've priced it at 64 to 1 seems still pretty high, even for draws for me.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That brings us to the end of another week's exciting podcast nature. Thank you, as always, to these three wonderful gentlemen for taking me through their teams and me bringing you the details of my team. Join us again next week, where we'll go through all over again. We'll see which one of myself or Mr. Wumpety has the particular bragging rights, as it were, for the Hull versus Borough game. Or, what's more likely, let's be honest, neither of us are happy because it's been a draw and we're both shit out for the playoffs.
Well, we've all predicted goals, so we'll look forward right now to the old nil-nil.
I'm going to say, we've all predicted goals, therefore nil-nil incoming, or it'll be nil-nil until the 98th minute when a corner goes in off someone's left eyebrow or something like that. But yes, tune in and we'll go through it all again for you. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in about a week's time. Until then, take care of yourselves. Keep an eye out for each other, and we'll see you around about next week. Bye.
So there we go. A bumper edition of the football podcast. They just get bigger and bigger, don't they? Big thank you for watching. Big thank you for listening. Big thank you for being here. Before you go, like, share, subscribe, comment. You know the drill by now. Please make it happen and become a member of the CookieCast crew. You can also check out the website, thecookiecast.com. There we've got social media links and an email button, and that way you can get in touch with us. That is it for this one. Until next time, I'm going to say bye, and I'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to these grumpy old men talk about football. If you've enjoyed this episode, please like, share and subscribe.